As long as I've been interested in reincarnation, which is a long time, I come across people that say, oh yes, I believe in reincarnation, but I'm not coming back. So we want to get this aside from the start before we look at deeper things. Casey said, and he was asked, if possible, what can I do to finish my Earth's experience in this life? It is ever possible, studying to show forth the Lord's death till he come again. What meaneth this? Just living those that are the fruits of the Spirit, namely, peace, harmony, long-suffering, brotherly love, patience. These, if you show them forth in your life, in your dealings with your fellow man, grow to what? Truth. In truth, you are free. Free from what? Earthly toil, earthly cares. These then are not just axioms, not just sayings, but living truths. So, that's for you guys that are not coming back. Okay. Now then, to deeper things. Going with this sense from the Casey readings that we have much to learn and much to unlearn, and that the unlearning is more difficult than the learning, and I wrestle with this every time I pick up a Casey reading or look at the Bible. I just find it, I've been interested in understanding worldviews for decades, and just because I understand a different worldview, that doesn't mean that I perceive everything differently. We grew up with the worldview that God is out there and that God is not in us or in things physical. And when we come across this teaching of the oneness of all force, that there is only God, you know, the Shema from the Jewish teachings, know, O Israel, the Lord thy God is one God, and there is none other. Well, just on a single word, that word none, which is in the Hebrew ein, E-I-N, can be translated accurately as not another God, or there is nothing else. There, know, O Israel, the Lord thy God is one, and there is nothing else than God. There is only God. And once we're clear about that, that we are God beings, then we address something that's called eternity. And all of you have heard the expression, we're in eternity now. But part of what that means is, and Casey said, oh, that all would learn the continuity of life, the continuity. And in a higher sense, there is no time. But for us in three dimensions, we work with the dimension of time, and so we can talk about what happened 1,000 years ago, 2,000 years ago, Jesus, 10,000, 12,000 years ago, Rata, and those of us that lived and experienced in those times of the Great Egyptian Awakening. And so it's not difficult for us to think 2,000 years ago, but what about 2,000 years from now? Where will we be in 4017? And both Casey, and especially the way it's worded in The Secret of the Golden Flower, he says something like this: time as we understand it is like a mayfly, but the continuation of life is like an illusion. And so, reflecting on eternity, now we have affirmed, and this is not only biblical, certainly Casey, we're God beings. And as God beings, as children of the Most High, we are without beginning and without ending. And so you can think, what's going to happen next year? Will I still be around 20 years from now? Will I still be around 50 years from now? Will I be back? what about 100 years from now? It's really easy to think about 100 years of separation. There was a woman that came that was told by Casey she was had been Frances Willard. And Caroline was her name. When you look at a photo of young Caroline and young Frances Willard, you can't tell the difference. But there was 100 years to the day from the death of Frances Willard to the birth of this woman. She had a collection of, she was trying to finish a collection of paintings from a certain artist when she visited the Frances Willard place in Chicago. Frances already had the complete collection. She especially enjoyed riding a bicycle. She visited Willard's home and she had a bicycle. She was so there are those things that continue with us. And what about going on and beyond? The topic that I want to share with you is the glory of the temple. Now, what does glory mean? In the Search for God material, book 2, there's a chapter on glory. And in a sentence, what glory says is, glory is the ability to serve. So when we say, for thine is the kingdom and the power and the glory, what is glory about? The ability to serve. Then what is the temple? All of us know the body is the temple. But what is the temple for? What is the temple about? And part of what we can learn about this is from the Old Testament design or pattern given for the building of the tabernacle, and then the New Testament, in which we are told that was just a pattern. So in the Old Testament, we see the words, "See thou make it according to the pattern given thee on the mount." And then in Hebrews, especially in 2 or 3 places, it says, God or Jesus, Christ has not entered into a temple made with hands, but into his own body, see? The body is the temple. Now, that puts us immediately into what I call a psychological consideration, and don't be troubled by this word. There's a psychological word that's really important for us, and it's called archetypes. Archetypal. The Old Testament tabernacle, for which such specific directions were given, how to make it. The man that in those times, working with Moses, that designed and built the tabernacle, was given a reading. And he was told that what he had done there gave him certain talents in the present life that he could use with respect to design and artistry and so on. So if the Old Testament tabernacle was a pattern, what that says is, and as Casey puts it this way, the body is a miniature replica of the universe. There's nothing in the universe that doesn't have its representation within us. So, the Old Testament tabernacle, with its specificity of design, is a pattern of what our body is about. For example, there is, as we understand, the 7 lampstands, the menorah, that symbolizes the 7 spiritual centers in the body. Now, what that means is that the pattern of the menorah, the 7 lamps, had the function, as the priest entered, had the function of awakening the 7 centers. What we can say is that what we're looking for is a within the body, what is the being represented? What is the representation in the pattern that shows up in the body? So if we understand that the seven lamps represent the seven centers, then we can look at other things. What about the veils? Two veils. A veil as you enter into the holy place, and then a veil into the holy of holies. What are these veils? Casey says we're in three dimensions. We have a physical body, a mental body, a spiritual body, and that there is a potential, he calls it an interconsciousness. But the veils represent that our consciousnesses are separated. For example, in the Hebrews, we are told that the priest would enter the holy place, but only once a year into the Holy of Holies. And in the Holy of Holies, there's the Ark of the Covenant, and on the top, the mercy seat with two angels, and that the priest would meet the God face to face between, in the midst of the angels, just as David led us this morning in our imagery to see in that space God face to face. Interesting, in the ark were three things: the manna, Aaron's rod, and the tables or the tablets of the law, which can represent very much the patterns of the energy flow within us. Now, the priest, not only do we have archetypal pattern structures, but we have archetypal processes. And the priest always entered with the blood, always. And everything was sprinkled with blood. Nothing that was not sprinkled with the blood. The tablets, everything. And what we learn from Casey then, with these seven centers, the top three, the thyroid represents the Holy Spirit, the pineal, the Christ center within, and the pituitary, the Father. So as the energies are raised in meditation and we invite them to rise up within us, what we're told in the Search for God section on meditation is that as the energies come to the pineal, which is the Christ center within us, those hormones, those forces in the pineal flow out and heal, have the potential of healing every cell in the body. So the big emphasis on the blood, as the priest would go into the Holy of Holies, taking the blood, sprinkle with the blood. When we're told by gospel preachers that we're saved by the blood, how does that work? How does that work? We met a friend of a friend recently. She asked what I was writing about. I said, a psychology of the soul. And she said, oh, I wouldn't be interested in that. I'm more interested in spiritual things. And what we need to understand especially is that things are lawful. God is love, but God is also lawful. The universe is lawful. There's a lawfulness about how everything works. When I was a senior in high school, I had a couple of really powerful spiritual experiences. One Holy Spirit experience. And then I got to Baylor, and they had something they called missions. On Friday nights, we'd go out to tell Bible stories to children or go to retirement homes. And one of them was on Saturday morning, street preaching on Skid Row in Waco, Texas. And I gave a talk there. I used the text, "This is the condemnation, that men loved darkness rather than light." I was probably 18, and afterwards, a young man came up, I think he was about 35. He had a little room there on Skid Row. He was an alcoholic. He had been separated from his family. He asked me to come in. I went in, we prayed, and I cannot tell you how impotent or powerless I felt. What have I to offer? What have I out to offer? You know, we're told you'll receive power after that the Holy Spirit has come upon you. And I had wondered, I was actually studying it. What is the work of the Holy Spirit? I had a Holy Spirit experience. Is it just kind of visited upon you? How does God decide, oh, like with a bolt of lightning, we'll hit him? And so I'd had this experience, but how many times have you had a loved one that's hurting? We have people in our fellowship here that are in pain, and don't you feel impotent and when you pray? And don't you wish you could pray more powerfully? And how can you receive power? Is it just something that's visited? Or is there something we're, as it were, to do about it? And the answer is, we must learn to meditate. I was talking earlier with the group about a book published by the ARE Press. It's in paperback. It's A Search for God. And it says, you can start with the chapters. There's a section on meditation. We've put it at the back. You can read that if you want to. And whoever had that idea completely missed the whole point, because the whole Search for God is about meditation. And it says, put meditation up front. But what this says is that the way in which we receive power is after that the Holy Spirit comes upon you. Well, the Holy Spirit is represented by the thyroid. And the power, when we say the Lord's Prayer, "For thine is the kingdom and the power and the glory." The kingdom, thyroid, Holy Spirit, represents the reign, R-E-I-G-N, the reign, the rulership. We say, "Not my will, but thine." We want that Spirit to rule. Thine is the kingdom and the power. Now, that's what we want to look at. The power. What is the power of healing? Casey says, in fact, yes, you can have a complete healing with just the sound of a word. Some people that just lay in on hands, like Olga Oral. She said, "I've felt tennis ball sized tumors disappearing right under my hands." I had a laying of hands for her, and I can understand that. Powerful healing energies. Where do you get this power? She said, "Oh, you can't train people to do it. It's just a gift." No, every one of us, as children of the Most High, with these temples in which we are promised we can meet God face to face, we have this promise. Now, how is that to come to pass except through successive experiences? The power in the blood. We sing, you probably never heard this. At Baylor, we used to sing these choruses. And one is, "There's power, power, wonder-working power in the blood of the Lamb. Power, power, wonder-working power in the precious blood of the Lamb." The power in the blood represents the hormonal secretions from the pineal, which is the Christ center within us. And it says, as that pineal is open, and you'll notice a correction on your handout. When we say, "My cup runneth over," I've just realized in the past couple of 3 years that that's not the pituitary. That's the pineal. My cup runneth over. And what Casey says is, when those secretions go out, that's the power to change. And then we say, thine is the power and the glory. Now, what is the glory? The ability to serve. So, I began getting interested in this as Easter approached, April 16th or so. I wasn't at the meeting, unfortunately. But I started reading about the resurrection. And what I find as I look carefully is that the resurrection is not just to be understood that we will have other incarnations. The resurrection of the physical body is promised to every one of us. And I've read this several times. Unless you have the worldview or the consciousness or the interest, unless you have the focus, you don't see it. But right there, Casey says, and then if you look carefully, you find it in the Bible, it's there, that the apostles who had these gifts of the Spirit for the purpose of developing man in his perfect form, for the perfecting. There's the image of God within us, and that image may be given perfecting. So the anticipation, I could document this with readings, but let me just say, research, both from the Bible, from the Casey readings, is there's the anticipation that every one of us can resurrect the physical body, not the flesh body, not the carnal body, the physical body. The promise of physical resurrection. Now, why would that happen? Why? What is the importance of the resurrection of Jesus? The ability to serve. For thine is the kingdom and the power and the glory. The glory is the ability to serve. I've been restudying a book by Gary Wills, who's a Greek scholar. He's written the book, What Paul Meant. And it's amazing. For one thing, only 7 of the 13 books that have traditionally been ascribed to Paul, scholars now just think that 7 of these are actual. And those letters were completed, those letters from Paul were completed 20 years before any other of the New Testament. Just a few months ago, I was going to quote something from Paul, and I thought, I'll go back to Matthew to see if that's what Jesus really said. No, it works the other way. Scholars now say, if you really want to see what Jesus meant, the closest you can get to it is the writings of Paul. And part of that problem is that the book of Acts that tell about Paul's journey and so on, and he describes Paul's conversion experience in 3 different terms. All 3 descriptions are different. This author says the book of Acts was kind of a novel. If you really want to know what happened to Paul, read what he said. And what he said was, he wasn't taught by men. He says, I wasn't taught by men. I was taught by the Master. He said, didn't I see him on more than one occasion? And Gary Wills in his book says, there's no reason to believe it happened only once. What Paul is saying is, and he describes this, he says, after the resurrection, there was Mary, and then there were the 11. Thomas was not present. Then there was the talk on the road to Emmaus with those 2. Then the appearance to the 12 with Thomas there. And then 500 people saw the resurrected Jesus. And then remember the what I call the Galilean beach party, how he appeared on the shores of Galilee, and they had caught no fish. And he said, cast out your net to the right. And it's interesting, the Bible tells us they pulled 153 fish in. And then he has prepared breakfast for them. What Casey says is honeycomb and fish. I've wondered, what did they talk about? What did he and the resurrected, this beach party, what did they talk about? What did they ask him? But the point is this, what did he do there? Why did he appear? Was it to talk, or was it simply to serve? The function of the resurrected Jesus, the function of our resurrected body, the glory of it, the glory of this temple, is it has a potential for an attunement so that the God beings that we are may be given manifestation for the purpose of being of help to others. The commandment, love God with all your heart, your neighbors, yourself. Casey says, the Apostle Paul says, it really boils down to loving your neighbor. So we have known forever love is the answer, but we haven't addressed the problem. Yes, love is the answer. What's the problem? The problem is, we as God's beings, before the beginning of time, literally, we as God beings, as co-creators of God, and with free will, made choices that were out of accord with the law of love. Now, the law of love is there for, if all of us as co-creators started creating, we might have things out of harmony with the other. The law of love simply says, as a co-creator, you have to create an accord that is not opposed to the creation of others. So if it's loving, then it can grow beyond everything. But if it's self, so the fall, as it were, the spirit of rebellion calls for obedience. The choices to be out of accord simply require us to choose to be in accord. The problem is self versus others. The only law that we need to learn is selflessness. And the way in which these energies may be raised, there are two ways. There are the fruit of the Spirit, which is patience, long-suffering, kindness. Let's use the word kindness. Why not be kind to those that you care for? Why not be kind to your friends? Why not, especially, believe me, it'll be worth it. Be kind to your spouse. You know, be kind. Here is a God being. I'm a God being relating to God beings. And the only way in which we can do this is through love. But there are two kinds of ways this works. The fruit of the Spirit, kindness, patience, long-suffering, and the gifts of the Spirit. To some, the gifts of healing. To some, the gifts of prophecy. To some, gifts, the word of knowledge. And I think Casey had this wonderful gift of the Spirit. He didn't pray, Lord, let me be a great psychic. He prayed, let me help children. Let me be of help. Now, when the desire, and that's the heart of it all, what is the desire, self or others? When the desire to be of help, these energies naturally rise, and they express in the fruit of the Spirit, but they also may be expressed in the gifts of the Spirit, and we become healers or teachers or prophets or psychics with an awareness of the word. What is the glory of the temple? The glory is the ability to serve. In the temple, is built in such a specific way that with our desires and with our focus and with our attention and singleness of purpose, we may allow these creative God energies to rise through us, to flow out and purify our bodies. And then, see, after the pineal is activated and those energies prepare the body and tune it up, then is when the pituitary comes. Pituitary, the father, that is when we disseminate it. What Casey says, every time you meditate, an erg of energy rises. He says, see it disseminated from the third eye. See it disseminated. The Secret of the Golden Flower calls this the heavenly heart. In the heavenly heart, life can be regulated. And the Secret of the Golden Flower tells us where this is. But this book also says how we got separated. There are polarities within us at birth that are brought together only in meditation. And as we bring that separated consciousness apart, it's the veils. When you take the veils down, what Casey calls the interconsciousness, when these veils are down, that is when these energies can rise and be sent out. So what Casey says is in the destiny chapters, destiny of the mind, destiny of the soul, destiny of the body. The destiny of the mind, the destiny of the soul is with God. The destiny of the body is with us. Will we choose, and he says all of us have this capability, will we choose to live in such a way that we may, through our experiences in the earth, come to the point where we can literally resurrect the body as Jesus did? The physical body, not the flesh body or the carnal body. He makes that distinction. What he says happened with Jesus was, when it is condensed, here's this pattern that we saw before the crucifixion, and then it's gone, and then it appears. He says, when it is condensed, it's the same body. And the same would be true for us. And there were those that were told by Casey they could do it in this lifetime. But the work is to eventually bring about a perfected body for every one of us. And that would be a perfected physical body. For what purpose? To serve. If you wish your prayers were more powerful, if you see someone you love in the hospital or someone that you care about and you wish, I wish I could pray and help that pain go away, then we have an invitation. You have a temple, you have a place built where with your intention you can meet God face to face, and those things that you ask will be done. And the Master said, the things I do, you can do, and greater. So Casey said, the work for the souls of men has gone down through thousands and millions of years for hundreds and thousands of years yet to come. We live in eternity. There's no end to it. We need a consciousness, continuity. And so we need a sense of direction that we don't have a short-termist attitude. All of us can start counting and we'll say, I have another 10, 20, 30, 40 years to go. That's about it. But that's just a drop in the bucket, hardly a drop compared to eternity. If you know you're going to die tomorrow, have a sense, I want to go to a place where I can grow and return to be of greater service. Get a sense of the continuity of life and that it goes on and on. I'll close with a lovely poem by Kipling. Strangers drawn from the ends of the earth, jeweled and plumed were we. I was the lord of the Inca race, and she was the queen of the sea. Under the stars, beyond our stars, where the new forged meteors glow. Hotly we stormed Valhalla a million years ago. She with the star I had marked for my own, I with my set desire, lost in the loom of the night of nights, lighted by worlds of fire. Met in a war against the gods, where the headlong meteors grow, hewing our way to Valhalla a million years ago. They will come back again, as long as the red earth rolls. He never wasted a leaf or a tree. Do you think he would squander souls? Thank you.
Thank you, Lily. Well, everyone, please stand and we will sing, I Go to the Rock.